Invite you to turn to the back of your bulletin where you'll find our gospel reading for this morning with two parables that describe something I experience at least once a week. Sometimes I experience it daily. I am constantly losing things and I can't attribute it to my age. This has happened for decades. Usually the things that I lose are things like my keys or like my glasses, and it's always frustrating because I lose those things when I need them the most. When I need to get out of the house quickly, you can almost count on it. The keys are not where I thought I laid them because I don't think about where I lay them. I just kind of toss them about and all of a sudden I can't get to where I want to be. Or my glasses are not to be found when I want to watch football or want to watch some TV series and I can't see from afar without them. And so, of course, they're nowhere to be found. I've found them in the refrigerator. I found them in the refrigerator. I often find them in the bathroom. I just take them off and don't think about it. So that this is a frustrating thing that happens to me often. And when I lose those items, I frantically search for them with great fevered expectancy. And I look so frantically and feverishly because these things are valued and important to me. I need them. There are some things that I've lost that don't matter and I still haven't found them. 15 years ago when I moved from Glastonbury to here, I lost my Gollum doll. I had this wonderful Gollum that someone had given me and it was lost somewhere in the move, nowhere to be found again. I've lost the belt to my Superman outfit, which, you know, I probably shouldn't be wearing that much anyway. So there are things that I lose that really don't have much value to me. But if I lose my keys, or I lose my glasses, or I lose my wallet, or I lose my child, all of a sudden, what's lost has incredibly precious value. Jesus tells two stories of a frantic search for what's lost, and he does it for the simple reason of showing that what's lost matters to God. It is not something that's forgotten. Instead, what's lost is something that is sought with passion, with a sense of urgency. And once whatever was lost is discovered and found again, there is such extreme joy that there is the need for all to celebrate. A party is thrown and joy abounds. Now that joy is the opposite of what you see in the first paragraph. We see the Pharisees and the scribes, the religious professionals, they are you and I in many ways, are grumbling. And they're grumbling because they believe, like we often believe, that you can judge a person by the people they hang out with, by the people that are attracted to them. And they have judged that Jesus is not a good guy because of this. The first verse, all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. The tax collectors nobody likes, and of course we don't like paying taxes, and so you don't like them just for that, but it was even worse in that culture because the tax collectors were seen as people that were sellouts. They had sided with Rome, they were taking Roman taxes, they were thus unpatriotic, they were perceived as being in contact with the Gentiles on a regular basis, and thus not only unpatriotic, but unclean. The sinners are those who were irreligious. They're the people that are not quite as devout as the Pharisees and the scribes. They don't take the law seriously, at least from their perspective, and thus are worthy of nothing but disgust. Well, this is the group that's hanging with Jesus. This riffraff, this collection of tax collectors and sinners. And from the Pharisees' perspective, they can do nothing but grumble because the tax collectors and sinners are lost. They are a lost cause. They're godless lawbreakers and hopeless sinners. They are not in any way devoted to God's ways like the Pharisees and the scribes perceive themselves to be. Well, Jesus disagrees with their assessment. He's frustrated by their grumbling. And instead of coming straight out and telling them what he wants to tell them, he does what he often does. He is wonderful at beating around the bush. He is wonderful at throwing out a landmine and watching it explode later once he's gone. When he tells a parable, he essentially throws out something that if you think about it long enough, you'll begin to see that he's actually challenged you even though he didn't come out directly and challenge you. The reason he is so like this is he loves the Pharisees and the scribes too. And they themselves are lost. They just don't know it. So he tells two parables. The first parable is the one of the lost sheep. It's about a shepherd that goes searching for a lost sheep. And, you know, it seems like a heartwarming tale until you realize how crazy it is. Because if you leave 99 sheep safe in a fold to go search for one, well, that's kind of responsible. 99 are in a fold, they're safe, and you go and search for the one. But if you read his parable carefully, verse 4, which of you having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99, ready for the phrase, in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost? And the answer would be, none of them would do that. That's not good business. You don't leave the 99 under threat and go search for one. This is a rather reckless rescue that the shepherd is going on, because he's at risk of losing more. And so you conclude, as you're hearing this story, either this shepherd's the worst shepherd that ever existed, he's absolutely foolish and completely bonkers, or this shepherd really, really loves the lost sheep. Well, the story turns out well, because the shepherd finds the lost sheep. His reckless act leads to the recovery of this one that is lost. And we read in the parable that the shepherd throws the sheep on his shoulders and calls all of his friends and neighbors to rejoice with him, because he's so happy that he has found that lost sheep that he's so crazy about. And Jesus' point is very clear. Not often does he explain the point of his parables, but in both of these he does. Verse 7, just so I tell you, there'll be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who feel they need no repentance. He says, you know, God's like this shepherd, reckless, wild, willing to leave the 99 who think they're just fine in order to rescue the one that clearly is at danger. And that God will go out of God's way to simply find that one. And once the one is found and recovered, God's joy so overflows that there's great joy in heaven. He then tells a second parable. It's one that doesn't have to do with recklessness. It's more about very careful searching for an item. It's a story about a woman who's lost one coin. And of course, you know, you might think one coin out of 10 is not a big deal. But for those of you like me that are on a very tight budget, you know that one coin matters. I mean, this coin matters. And because she's searching so diligently for this one coin, you realize she desperately needs it. And you get a sense in verse 8. She lights a lamp. She sweeps the house. She searches carefully. She is looking in every nook and cranny and corner. She's meticulously giving herself over to this search. And you sense her anxiety, and you also then share her joy. Because once she discovers it, she does exactly what the shepherd did. She takes it, she calls her neighbors, she calls her friends, she says, let's celebrate, let's throw a party. And Jesus says, God's like this woman too. Verse 10, just so I tell you, there's joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. That just like the shepherd who recklessly searches, the woman who meticulously, carefully searches represents God and God's seeking heart, looking meticulously, giving everything over to the search for that is lost, turning over every stone to find, and then experiencing great joy. There's great joy in heaven, which is to say that joy is exuding from the throne. It's exuding from God. And so with these two parables, Jesus speaks of joy. God's joy in seeking and in finding the lost. And he is contrasting that joy with verse 2, the grumbling of the Pharisees. Though they grumble, because Jesus welcomes the riffraff, Jesus reveals, you know, that grumbling's out of place. It doesn't in any way match the joy that God has in seeking and redeeming the lost. And by speaking of heaven's joy, he is showing how the Pharisees are so dead set against it, how their hearts in no way in line with God's seeking and finding heart. They claim to be devout. They claim to have the heart of God. But if they had the heart of God, they'd have joy as they see Jesus in the presence of the tax collectors and sinners. But they don't have joy. They instead have grumbling. Jesus wants to speak of joy in this two parables. 10 verses, 5 times you read the word joy. The whole joy of finding and discovering, the joy of after a reckless search, finding, the joy of after a meticulous, careful search, finding. And Jesus wants to make it clear to these Pharisees that this is God's joy. The joy of God is in seeking, finding, welcoming the riffraff. Those that they would never see as objects of God's passion, being the very objects that God seeks meticulously, indeed even recklessly. That they, Jesus hopes, would discover that joy in their own hearts. Because we pray this, as in heaven, so on earth. Thy will be done, as in heaven, so on earth. Whatever the joy of heaven is, ought to be our joy. And if the divine joy is in the seeking and the finding of the riffraff, of those who are lost, of those deemed lost causes, then the Pharisees cannot grumble over that. They need to join in the party. Now, one of the reasons they can't is because to them, lost doesn't mean treasured. Lost means loser. Lost means an individual that is a lost cause. They are riffraff. For them, loss doesn't have any positive dimension. It is all negative. And I grew up in a church and preached in a church for 10 years where we used the term lost very disparagingly. You use the lost almost like a curse word about someone. They're lost. I'm found. You know, they're unrighteous. I'm righteous. And so forth. You had this sense of where lost had this horrible dimension. But do you notice in these parables, what's lost is not bad. What's lost is not unimportant. What's lost is precious and cherished and valued. Because you wouldn't go looking for something unless you cherished and valued it. That's why the Pharisees and scribes won't go looking for the lost. They have no love for it. But God does. That's why sometimes I think, as much as I love to preserve biblical language, maybe there's a better term for lost that gets at the preciousness of the lost, how God cherishes them. And there really is one word that you could use and substitute for lost that actually makes the point of the parable more vivid and more visceral. We just celebrated the 19th, 18th, 17th, I'm so bad with math, the 18th celebration of 9/11. If you remember, after 9/11, there was a whole walls and walls in New York City full of missing posters. Now, these loved ones knew that the ones that were missing, that were lost, were no doubt probably not alive, and yet they couldn't fathom saying it out loud. They couldn't fathom saying that they're lost for good. And so you had an endless amount of missing posters put up all over the place to show that these people were treasured, they were valued, they were cherished. When someone goes missing, we throw up a missing poster and friends and relatives pull out all stops. They will make every effort. They'll scour fields. They'll look over all kinds of records. They'll do everything possible in their power to find the one that is missing. A parent whose child has gone wayward, they're missing. A parent, or anyone really, whose pet goes missing, not to equate the two, but the idea that when someone or something you love is missing, you don't just simply say, I'll keep going on. You instead recognize that what's cherished and precious is no longer there, and it deserves and merits every ounce of your energy to try to recover. And that's what's going on in our parable. By two very unlikely heroes, and this is where, you know, Jesus' storytelling is so wonderful. Shepherds and women were not perceived as pictures of God for the most part. Shepherds were unlikely heroes because they're rogues. They're a bit thuggish. They are working stiffs, and so 24/7 the sheep need them, which means they can't go to synagogue. They certainly aren't going to make a trek to Jerusalem for a festival, so they're deemed as very irreligious, and yet Jesus presents the shepherd as the hero of our story. And then, of course, the woman in a patriarchal culture was considered weak and powerless. And Jesus is ready to say, you know, God is just like this woman. She's far from being weak and powerless. She persists. She keeps searching. She will not give up. Nevertheless, she persists. She's going to find what's lost, no matter what it takes. It is these two unlikely heroes that frantically search for what's lost. And Jesus' whole point is to say, they search so frantically and even, indeed sometimes recklessly, because that's what God is like. That's how much God loves the lost, the wayward, the lost causes, the riffraff. That God is like the shepherd. That God is like the woman. And of course, God is like Jesus, to whom the tax collectors and sinners have come, that has caused the grumbling of the self-righteous. Jesus will search, even if he's just searching for one, because he reveals to us the heart of God, the God who is the God of the least, the God of the last, and the God of the lost. Jesus wants the Pharisees, the scribes, you and I, the religious elite, the religious professionals, the devout. He wants us to share heaven's joy and celebrate the homecoming of the lost, to realize their value, to cherish them, because it's easier to condemn. It's easier to exclude and grumble. I don't know why, but it's in me. I assume that it's in most of us. It's so easy to grumble and complain and yet still appreciate the grace you've been given while grumbling over the potential grace that another person might receive. I don't know why it's so easy to want God to be as small-hearted and as grumpy as we are, but we religious folk can do that, and Jesus is trying to put a stop to that. We all have our lost causes. We all have our riffraff. Lynn Jepinga, in a commentary on this, puts it well when she says, in our contentious, polarized society, there are many groups that evoke similar disdain and grumbling. People grumble about Republicans, Democrats, Muslims, immigrants, poor people, the homeless, people of other races, liberals, conservatives, advocates of gay marriage, and critics of gay marriage. Almost everyone can find a reason to grumble about somebody. And yet for Jesus, everyone on that list and more is beloved. Beloved of God, and some are lost and endangered. But God recklessly pursues. They all are like valuable coins hidden in a dark corner. And what we can do as God's own is thank God that God seeks the lost. You know why? Lost things can't find themselves. My keys couldn't find themselves in my children's sermon. My glasses couldn't find themselves. They needed someone to recover them. And thank God that God actively seeks not only the lost and wayward, but even us when we are straying. That God continues to seek, because there are many ways to be lost. You all know that. We all know that. We lose our way sometimes. We lose our hope. We lose our joy. We lose our faith. We lose our journey. And most troubling, sometimes we think we're fine, but we're really deeply lost, like the Pharisees and scribes in this story. Thank God Jesus' mission is to seek and save the lost. Whether it's wanderers and wayward, whether it's self-righteous, small-hearted grumblers, God's greatest joy is in the finding and recovering of the lost. Not to condemn them because of their waywardness. The shepherd doesn't slap the sheep and say, how could you do this? Instead, the shepherd tosses the sheep on his back and celebrates. You know, the next parable that Jesus tells, if we were to move on to verse 11, because he actually tells three parables here, is the parable of the prodigal son. And that's, sadly, our lectionary just cuts it off at this point, because that's a long parable, but it just further promotes that idea that once the lost are found, God doesn't, you know, say, how could you do that? Instead, the father runs and grabs and says, let's throw a party, while the older brother says, hey, why is he such a big deal? I've been here the whole time. That person represents the Pharisees and scribes here, the grumblers. Jesus wants us to share heaven's joy. And to share heaven's joy, we must share God's seeking heart. When our keys go missing, our glasses go missing, or when the missing go missing. Those that are treasured and valued, that we are terrified of losing. When that happens, because we treasure, there should be a seeking and a recovery, and once found, a great celebration, for the lost are needed. They're not to be shunned or forgotten, or even worse, grumbled over. Would you pray with me?